He is Robin Leach. This is Car Keys.
Yes, and unfortunately, Jay's not with us today on this show that you are listening to because of an emergency that came up with a dog, I think, or something. He also has an airport run that he had to be on the way to by 10 o'clock, so whether he can do both, he's not here, but here we go. The auto show we mentioned briefly last week, I have a sheet in front of me which tells me about the Big Apple debuts, show differing paths for Cadillac and Lincoln in their list of new to the New York show, or new to the New York industry, debuts of cars that I guess previously have not shown up in Detroit or any of the other U.S. shows to date. Nothing really looks crazily new. I don't know what the Lincoln Corsair is. The Cadillac CTS, I guess, is new. And Audi has two new models. Hyundai has a new model. Mercedes has five models that they're going to debut here. Nissan has three, Porsche has one, Subaru has one, and Toyota has one. And there will probably be some electric models that aren't in this particular list. It's coming up. I think it opens next week, and I will be going the following Wednesday.
How long does it run?
It runs through the 29th of April, I believe.
And it opens?
This coming Wednesday, or Thursday of this week. Today's the 15th, right? I think it opens the 19th. I'm going the 24th.
Okay.
In any event, to that end, while new things are coming to the show, I happen to have the chance to have a loaner Ram 1500 pickup classic edition. And I had it for 24 hours while my Jeep was being serviced. It was very nice to get a loaner. I had no clue what it was going to be. The first thing I noticed was how hard it was to climb up into it, because all the pickups have gotten relatively high off the ground. They're all basically four-wheel drive models, although you can get them in two-wheel drive versions. But around New England, it's very rare to see a two-wheel drive version of anything that has four-wheel drive versatility options available. That goes for crossovers, sedans, and trucks. We know the success of Quattro drive lines from Audi, and VW now has finally gotten smart and come back, and Subaru for years. And many of the American sedan versions from Dodge and Ford, and to a lesser degree GM, have a few four-wheel drive versions available. The Fusion did not. One of the reasons I didn't ever get interested in the Fusion, although it's very good in its hybrid version, was that the Fusion never had a quattro or four-wheel drive alternative available. Neither does the Hyundai Sonata, of which I have a two-wheel drive hybrid version.
So question, is there a preference in two-wheel drive, or is it just...
It's a marketing thing. You know, we all had two-wheel drives before four-wheel drive became the norm with Subaru and Audi,
right,
for the most part. Audi maintained a two-wheel drive in their convertible version for a long time, and now the convertible versions are quattro too, I believe, at least in the U.S. They may have front-wheel drives available somewhere else, but I'm not aware of it. You remember when it was rear-wheel, two-wheel drive.
Can I remember when?
And then they decided to go front-wheel drive, and they claimed that front-wheel drive was certainly better because of the weight of the engine over the front wheels gave you more driving tractive power on snowy conditions.
Which I could never quite.
And the great funny thing about that was if you were going up a fairly steep hill in a front-wheel drive vehicle, and you hit slippery conditions and you were going around a corner, it's amazing which direction you went when the wheels started slipping in a front-wheel drive car, yeah, which they would not do on a rear-wheel drive car.
Because the weight
so
was...
So there are always positives and negatives to every drivetrain out there, except maybe the four-wheel drive versions. The only negative with that, which was insignificant as far as I was concerned, was gas mileage. But with the development of very slippery fluids, there was very little drive efficiency loss to lost miles per gallon in the four-wheel drive drivetrains, maybe a mile or two or three at the most in general.
And that way, at least you had four shots.
Four shots of getting around the corner right. up the hill instead of two.
Which seems like seems sensible to me, right.
So going back to the pickups, this classic rear Ram was a very nice vehicle to have for 24 hours. I have not driven a pickup for 24 hours in my life since I had the compact pickups back in last century, which included the Ford Courier and the Mazda pickup, of which the Courier was a derivative built by Mazda, branded by Ford. And they were very nice size vehicles back then for my needs and usages. They were great for hauling brush to brush piles off the property and moving basically just about anything in lesser quantity that you could do in a large size pickup. But this Ram had the 5.7 liter Hemi V8 in it. And let me tell you something. When you want to forget about trying to get high gas mileage and get somewhere fast, either passing a vehicle on in a limited passing zone or getting up a hill fast or getting away from a stoplight fast, the Ram, the 5.7 liter V8 is a gasoline-powered.
You'd rather a V8 than a four-cylinder.
Well, this goes back to, would you? Yes.
No,
although the four-cylinders, I mean, Ford is coming out, and we may see it at the auto show, I don't know, with a high-performance four-cylinder Mustang. Now, I don't think of a four-cylinder Mustang being high performance. They tried it some years back in the smaller versions, but the newer ones have been getting heavier with more technology weight in them and other than that, although they've been trying to get lighter. And this will progress, possibly make them lighter in the front end and lighter a little bit on the road. How a four-cylinder high performance works, we know that four-cylinder engines can go. I have what I would consider to be a relatively, not a real high-performance four-cylinder, but a very generously pleasing four-cylinder engine in my leased 2019 Cherokee, which I have said on this show before is probably, for those who want to drive a Cherokee with a lot of FUD attached, you get one of these with the turbo engine in it, and you can make distance quickly.
What
and
I would like
with verve, which means with power. And it's very good for passing. And the mileage on it, when not using the turbo a lot, exceeds the mileage per gallon attainment you can get on the other two engine versions, which
what
is
what I'm interested in is if such a thing exists, you take your Dodge 5.7
liter,
V8,
yes,
right?
And put
okay.
it against
and
what?
Put it against a
Let's put
Dodge.
It against a Chevrolet Silverado that's coming out, is available this year with a four-cylinder engine. That's
and
the big
I wanna
pickup alternative.
I want to see how does it make the same, how does it feel?
Feels great, Jill. And it was very fast. I actually was trying to see what kind of mileage I could get on it, and I put it on cruise control and about 55 miles an hour between Tarrington and Sharon. And I did a to and fro round trip, and I ended up even using the V8 power a couple of times to see how quick it was. 19 miles per gallon, a little bit more than that one way without using the power of the V8, and it reached 19 with using the power a couple of times. So it's true that you can get reasonable miles per gallon, what is reasonable, but with a big V8, if you call just about 20 miles per gallon reasonable. But I don't think that most people drive the way I do. I see too many cars and trucks idling in the parking lots in front of the post office in this town. People jump out of their vehicles. They go inside for a quick 5 minutes or less pickup at a pharmacy or something, and in the wintertime, the engines are running. Certainly an ideal way to steal a vehicle if you want to, but in Sharon, Connecticut, I doubt that happens. But it's just, it's amazing. You know, the EPA in its wisdom said, okay, we want to post all the miles per gallon capabilities of all the vehicles, thinking that the public's going to go out and buy them on the base. Yes. It's like trying to read the calorie levels of all the foods in the fast food restaurants.
No, increase the portions.
I have never seen anybody knowingly reading the calories before they put an order in at the fast food restaurant. Doesn't matter which one it is.
It gets bigger.
I don't go in many of them, but
it gets bigger. Is it the whole thing is sort of, it defies credulity.
Well,
but what I'm trying to...
We're not talking about fast food stuff.
No, irrespective, I am trying to find out from you whether if you had the option on a V8, you would take it. That's what I'm trying to find out.
you know, the four cylinders and the six cylinder reduced size of the engines are so good, I might not. Okay. But I want to drive it first. But I will tell you that they do not, the miles per gallon rating for the Jeep Cherokee with the turbo engine is no better than the miles per gallon rating for the non-turbo version of the engine. And it's 29 highway. Well, it might be 1 mile per gallon better in the medium.
As you said, nobody's going to.
But on the road, it's noticeably different if you drive to see what you can do in mileage on a trip. And when you can get 31 to 32 miles per gallon on a trip with a turbo engine and only 29 to 30 with the regular, which is not significantly different, incidentally, listeners, it builds up after a 16-gallon tank. You know, 2 gallons more is approximately 30 to 32 miles per gallon more, 32 miles further before you start having to look for gas if you're in a remote gasoline center. Enough on that. What else do we have? Oh, we talked a little bit about the model. I was hoping Jay was going to be here to enhance this particular topic.
You can save it
till
next week.
No, I'm not going to save it for next week because he may have some other things about Tesla next week. But the fact of the matter is, the news for Tesla in Europe is only getting better, which meaning better for Tesla in that they are able to move product across the pond, as we sometimes call the Atlantic Ocean or the ocean, to a new market as sales seem to be moderating in the U.S. And why they might be moderating, they're not yet enough competing vehicles out there to really take one's attention away from Tesla.
I thought last week that you were discussing incentives.
Well, we were discussing, incentives have ended for Tesla.
Right.
Yes, and if they're on other ones, like Audi will have incentives for a while, but they're going to end on the Bolt and the Volt.
But what I was saying is
maybe if
the
that's
incentives
the way
still exist in Europe. So
yes,
why?
And there's a lot, I don't know about the incentives in Europe. Yes, there are incentives
that
in Europe.
That is what Jay had said last
taxes,
week.
No taxes on some of the cars or whatever.
That's what Jay had said last week. What are the real drivers, no pun intended, of
the Well, they're selling Teslas. So well in Europe that it's more than taxes that are selling these cars, so tax incentives. Although, if you can buy – some of the Scandinavian countries, as we said last week, I think are trying to get to be all electric by 2025. They are really putting the push on to get rid of the combustion engine vehicle sale availability in their countries. And whether that will spread to the other European countries before 2030, say, I don't know. But there are all sorts of reasons for going electric. The driving in Europe is different than the U.S. They are smaller countries. Some of the countries are smaller than some of our states. So when you go for a when you go to do work in the European countries, you do not drive anywhere near the potential number of miles a day or kilometers a day that you would be doing and that you can do often in our country. For those who, for example, live out in the end of Long Island or something, which is a major commuting time in the morning and the afternoon, and your point about when you're idling there, something's still using electricity if you're stuck in a log jam or traffic jam for an hour going 3 miles. I don't know how much electricity you use up in an electric car with the air conditioning going, but you're using electricity. So this so-called 250 to 330-mile range
is still not comfortable for me, which is why I would
exactly.
go hybrid. I would go electric
hybrid.
And I
hybrid
see
that
self-charging,
and it doesn't get the it isn't pure electric, so you're using gasoline. But you can get such good mileage on some
hybrid.
Of these hybrids from the Prius to the Hyundai vehicles and some of the other ones that are coming on. Do we really care whether we're all electric yet or not, other than those who want to think?
Bearing in
green.
Mind that also gallons per liters and the price of gasoline here is significantly lower than in.
Yes, and you know the funny thing about this gasoline, as you know, it's been going up quite steadily in the past month and a half, and it was not projected this in the news 3 months ago.
It
and we know that
is.
The news on gasoline changes like weather.
No, it changes depending on the amount of profit that
absolutely.
Is being shifted from pocket to pocket.
It's correct.
And anyone who doesn't recognize that is...
And we keep repeating the same thing in our shows every few weeks when we get going about ranting about the gas pricing situation.
No, but it's just as you...
Somebody came down from Maine and said they paid $2.32 a gallon this weekend up in way up in North Maine. they filled up before they came to down here. And it's, what, it's 276 here in Sharon. It's 279 in Canaan or higher. And it's over $3 in some places in New York going down 22. And it's there's probably no rhyme or reason for the pricing exactly. I don't think
the
gas taxes are doing anything.
But it's 267 over the line.
Correct.
Or it was 269, yep. But prior to that it was 263.
And we've gotten that covered for this week. Yeah. What's next? Will the gas prices keep going up, and will the pickup sales slow down? I don't know. But back to did I finish about the Dodge Classic? What was really nice about it, besides the engine, if you really thought the engine was nice, was that it was amazingly simple inside. It had Bluetooth connectivity for the phone. It didn't have a lot of technology. It had the old style grill. I do not know what the sticker was because, unfortunately, the window sticker, this was a loaner dealer registered car for loaners, and they didn't, unfortunately, leave the sticker in the glove compartment where I riffled through so I could see what it was. But I'll bet it was $40,000 or less for this model, and it did not have a bed liner. It did not have some of the fancy things in the new ones. The new ones are $50,000 and $60,000 decked out with the fancy leather seating and all that.
So what was this, would you reckon?
This was, I don't think it probably was 40. It might have been 35. I don't know.
Remember, you used to be able to, and I saw it.
But it had all you needed. It had four-wheel drive, and it had the load capacity. It had the comfortable seats. It had a great engine. And it had all the things inside. The only thing I might have liked would have been blind spot monitoring in the side mirrors, because I think that is one of the best safety features, especially if you're cruising on the interstates. And you've got these tractor trailers also competing for the left lanes sometimes. And you can lose them, as we have said several times, in the pillar right behind your seat. You can lose an entire length of a tractor trailer between the because you don't have a convex mirror on the driver's side. So this blind spot monitoring and beeping and all that that goes on in these new technology-laden cars is a very good safety feature. And it works on the right side, too. So if you're in the middle lane and somebody's coming fast down the right lane, passing when they're not supposed to be, but I'm guilty of doing it because sometimes that's the fastest lane to move in on some of the interstates, as we have also said in other shows. The blind spot monitoring feature is a very good thing. I'm not so sure I'm smitten with the sort of lane keeping features that makes your car stay in the between two marked lanes. I haven't driven enough vehicles with it. Jay has, as I think he mentioned last week. I think he said he liked it. Some of them are not as good as others at remaining quiet between the two lanes, which means that they will generally sort of drift back and forth between the two while the computer tries to catch up. And it makes you think you've got a loose steering system, which I think I said many shows ago when I went for a test drive in a vehicle that had that feature, and I thought my steering system was not connected properly.
There was, in my view, a very irresponsible AT&T connectivity commercial. I don't know whether you've seen it. That basically has a father driving totally distractedly, trying to kill his family because he's reading his emails, and his wife says, "Dad, honey," and the father says, "Oh, well, it's work." And then the whole point is ultimately, soon you'll be able to be driving totally autonomously, but until then, don't drive distracted.
Well, what's coming down the line is this version, what is it, version 5 of
it's connectivity. It's 5G, but 5G. The point is,
and it's going to change a lot. I just read an article on it. It was frightened me about wanting to have 5G. I mean, a lot of you probably do want it, but I don't know I want it. We're going to be watched by it.
We're totally watched by
it. It's
going
to allow autonomous driving cars to work better.
But the autonomous driving, and this is the thing, and the autonomous life, and this is the thing. You know, if you get in a car and you're going someplace, you should be a little focused on getting there.
Well, I still don't know how anybody wants to sit in the driver's seat and have the hands in their lap and try to read
a movie.
I don't know anybody that could comfortably do it. I watch these test drivers when they show them on TV, and they get their hands in their lap, and they're looking straight ahead, most of them. The guy that didn't was the guy that was looking down, and he hit a bicyclist crossing the road or some pedestrian. In a lift or a, you know, whatever it was. But we're getting close to the end. I'm looking at a picture of the Jeep Gladiator, which is coming to a dealer near us. You, listener, probably a Jeep dealer near you, wherever you are.
What is the Gladiator?
It's a pickup Jeep Wrangler, four-wheel Wrangler. Here it is for you to look at before I grab it back. It's going to come in a myriad of outdoor features.
It's coming camouflage?
Yep, it does come in camouflage. You'll be able to get camouflage paint of some kind or another, special order probably, and you'll have to wait a few extra weeks. I think it's going to be a real hit. But, you know, they show various versions with a camper on top, different pickup beds with different features, one holding two motorbikes of not very big feature, I guess. And there's even a two-door possible variant of it, which may not be a production vehicle right away, but and it comes in all sorts of colors, and I can guarantee you the Jeep people are going to be thrilled, and I think Jeep is going to be thrilled. However, the one questionable situation is how much will people pay to get these fancily out-equipped Jeep Gladiators, because they're not going to be cheap. I think they're going to start at $40,000+ for the basest model, most basic model you can get with the least optional packages, but I think it's going to skyrocket right up to $60,000 and maybe up.
But if you're leasing something like that, what do you end up?
Well, of course, you know, leasing is less than financing, but still leasing a $60,000 vehicle is more expensive than leasing a $30,000 vehicle. I'm leasing a $30,000 Jeep, and I believe my payments, including insurance, taxes, and license, are $279 a month for 3 years with 36,000 miles, so limited miles, before I have to pay up on that. And to finance that same vehicle probably would have cost me for 3 years, and I wouldn't have done it because I couldn't have afforded it at $500 to $600. And, of course, as I said on another show, anybody can do the basic math, figure out the cost of your vehicle that you're trying to buy, divide it by the retail price or the cost you're paying by three, divide it by 36, and you'll see what 36 payments before interest is added on will cost you before you get the interest added on. And the higher you go in the purchase of the car, the higher that monthly payment's going to be. And I can guarantee you it's higher than leasing the vehicle, although you have the freedom of unlimited miles. You own the vehicle at the end. The bank owns it until you pay off that last one, that last payment.
Which I think in a lot of cases.
And that's why you stretch them out to 6 years, and then 3 years into the ownership of this one that you financed to purchase, you're now dissatisfied because a better one has come along and you haven't paid off the first one by quite an amount of money. And that is always the difference between leasing and purchasing. The manufacturers and dealers have a better way to sell you a car no matter what your income is. And if you can, the interest rate varies on the leases, the interest rate varies on your credit history, and the interest rate varies on the amount you borrow. And if there's a way to get it down to where you can afford it, it may go to the end of your life before you've paid it off, but they will still loan you the money. You know, you see these signs on the dealers. Nobody is refused for financing, and I don't know how they do it.
He is Robin Leach. This is Car Keys.